Hi, we're back with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, September 17th. This is Ruth McCauley, and as we always do, I'll start with some of the recent notices of services over the recently deceased. Beverly Cleary Smith McDonald, 97, of rural Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away at 3 a.m. Tuesday, September 15th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. A service to celebrate Beverly's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 19th, in the Mount Zion Presbyterian Church. Burial will be in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. tomorrow, Friday evening, at the church. Memorials may be made to the Mount Zion Presbyterian Church or the Mount Zion Foundation for Quality Education. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion is assisting the family with arrangements. John F. Seitz, 82, of LaPlace, Illinois, passed away at 6:58 a.m. Wednesday, September 16th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, September 19th, at LaPlace United Methodist Church. Burial will be in LaPlace Cemetery in LaPlace, Illinois. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur are assisting the family with the arrangements. Memorial donations may be made to LaPlace United Methodist Church or to the American Cancer Society. Arvel Leon Thompson, 73, of Tower Hill, passed away at 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, September 15th, in his residence. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, September 19th, at 10:30 a.m. in Howe & Yawkey Funeral Home in Shelbyville, with the Reverend Kurt Finley and the Reverend Ron Newman officiating. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. tomorrow, Friday, in the funeral home. Burial will be in Tower Hill Cemetery with military rites by the Shelby County Honor Guard. Memorials may be given to the Tower Hill Free Methodist Church or to the Gideons International. Audrey Nadine West, 89, of Shelbyville, died at 4:57 p.m. on Monday, September 14th, in Shelbyville Manor. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 17th. That's today. I'm sorry, that's already occurred. In Howe & Yawkey Funeral Home, with the Reverend Derek Ritchie and the Reverend David Bierbauer officiating. Visitation was held yesterday morning. Wow, am I getting a little confused? This morning, earlier today, casual attire was requested. Burial is scheduled to take place at Antioch Cemetery near Westervelt, Illinois. Memorials may be given to the Tower Hill Christian Church or to the Shelby County Senior Center. Janet Claire Winter, 67, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, September 15th, at St. John's Hospital in Springfield with her family by her side. Services to celebrate the life of Janet Winter will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, September 19th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be tomorrow evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will take place in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the American Heart Association. Glenn Rex Falk, 95, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, September 14th, at Imboden Creek Living Center in Decatur. Per Rex's wishes, private services will be held. Military rites will be conducted by Macon County Honor Guard. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur is handling the arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Macon County Honor Guard, 27 Madison Drive, Decatur, 625-1. Pershing Griffith, formerly of Decatur, passed away on August 31st, just short of his 97th birthday. His death took place in Westfield, New York. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 19th, at Prairie Avenue Christian Church in Decatur, with a time of coffee and cookies beginning at 9:30 a.m. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, September 18th, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with Masonic services at 8 p.m. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park in Harristown, Illinois, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorials be made to Prairie Avenue Christian Church, 2201 East Prairie Avenue in Decatur, 62521. Edna Mae Melhorn, Linda, 59, passed away Thursday morning, September 10th, in the Symphony of Decatur. Cremation rites have been accorded. Beatrice Austin Sanderson, 90, of Sycamore and formerly of Harlingen, Texas, died on Friday, September 11th, in Poplar Grove, Illinois. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, September 19th, at Olson Funeral and Cremation Services in the Quirum Sycamore Chapel, 1245 Somonauk, and that's Somonauk Street in Sycamore, Illinois, with the Reverend Dan Swinson and the Reverend Harlene Harden co-officiating. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday prior to the services at the funeral home. Memorials in lieu of flowers may be made to Sycamore United Methodist Church or Turning Point Ministries. Jacob E. Schrock, 88, of Fort Wayne, Indiana, formerly of Sarasota, Florida, and Arthur, Illinois, passed away at 2:55 a.m. on Saturday, September 12th, at the Parkview Regional Medical Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tomorrow, Friday, September 18th, at the Sunnyside Mennonite Church, 475 East State, Route 133 in Arcola. The Reverend Tom Miller, the Reverend J.R. Weaver, and the Reverend Joe Diner will officiate. Burial will be in the Sunnyside Mennonite Church Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. This evening, Thursday, September 17th, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola, and also 1 hour prior to the funeral on Friday at the Sunnyside Mennonite Church. Stephen E. Uber, 58, of Hardin, Kentucky, formerly of Niantic, Illinois, died on September 11th at the Trigg County Hospital in Cadiz, Kentucky. Please join his family at the celebration of his life from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday. So that's this evening, September 17th, Thursday, at the Staab, STAAB Funeral Home, 1109 South 5th Street in Springfield, Illinois, 62703. Memorial donations or cards may be forwarded to Mrs. Teresa, T-E-R-E-S-S-A, Uber, 103 Callaway Lane, Hardin, Kentucky, 42048. Audrey N. West, 89, of Shelbyville, died at 4:56 p.m. on Monday, September 14th, in Shelbyville Manor. Funeral services were held earlier today in Howan Yawkey Funeral Home in Shelbyville, with visitation being scheduled just before that service. Burial was scheduled to take place at Antioch Cemetery near Westervelt, Illinois. Memorial donations may be made to the Shelby County Senior Center or to the Tower Hill Christian Church. We turn now to the editorial page and pick up an editorial written by staff at the Decatur Herald and Review. Democrats ignore their role. The state's monetary award program allows hundreds of Illinois students to attend college who might not otherwise have the opportunity. Unfortunately, the program is currently caught in the struggle over a state budget. The program is important, especially when students and their families have come to rely on the funding to pay for a college education. The uncertainty currently surrounding the program makes the situation even more frustrating for students and colleges. The grants are also important to universities. For example, Millikan University President Patrick White said the university has about 730 students depending on about $3.4 million in MAP grants for the 2015-2016 academic year. White emphasizes the grants are only a fraction of the financial aid provided to Millikan students. Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frericks, a Democrat, has been hosting events to bring light to the MAP grant issue. One was held recently at Millikan with Senator Andy Menar, a Democrat of Bunker Hill, and Representative Sue Scherer, Democrat of Decatur. Scherer got emotional, I think is the word, when she explained how a MAP grant allowed her to attend Illinois State University, which led to 34 years of teaching in Decatur and Moroa Forsyth schools. Do you have to be rich to go to college or to follow your dreams? Is that how it is in Illinois? Scherer said. I don't think so. Well, we agree with Scherer's sentiments. It's always a little shocking when Democrats act as if the budget crisis and the fallout happened without their knowledge. The budget crisis is primarily the result of years of spending beyond the state's revenues and the rollback of the 2011 temporary income tax increase, all of which happened while Democrats were in control of the legislative and executive branches of state government. This spring, the General Assembly passed a budget that included spending for items such as the MAP grants, but did not pass a revenue plan to match the spending. In fact, the Democratic budget was $4 billion out of balance. The current political stalemate is the result of Governor Bruce Rauner demanding that the General Assembly address his turnaround agenda before he agrees to tax increases necessary to approve a reasonable budget. It's unfortunate that students depending on MAP grants for their college education, along with many others, are caught in the middle of this political mess. The uncertainty is unfair to students, parents, and to institutions such as Millikan. Events such as the one held at Millikan last week are part of the political game, and there's no sense in asking politicians not to practice their craft. But voters and taxpayers need to understand that those politicians expressing support and sentiment for the students had a role in creating the situation that now exists. And they could have a role in solving it, but they first must understand and accept how the crisis evolved. Let's turn now to the people's opinions with their letters to the editor of the Decatur Herald and Review. Our first is written by, signed by Jeff Lucal, L-U-E-C-A-L, of Decatur. It carries a editorial of transparency, editorial invites conflict and discord. In a September 10th editorial, Open Council Selection Process, the Herald and Review called the process being followed by the Decatur City Council in selecting a replacement council member absurd. While condemning the alleged lack of transparency in the process, the Herald and Review editorial clearly implied the City Council is functioning as a secret cabal, so it may act against the best interests of the citizens. While blithely impugning the integrity and honesty of council members, the Herald and Review demonstrates it doesn't appreciate the concept of representative democracy. Representative democracy establishes a trust between those elected and the voters. Voters must expect and trust that those they elect will exercise good judgment in this and all matters. No citizen is automatically entitled to the open council seat. At the same time, all may contact council members to freely express their opinion on this and all other matters. In April 2017, voters will have the opportunity to express themselves on all decisions made by the council. Some may choose to seek election at that time. The only thing absurd is the newspaper's call for an open session where all 20 applicants can be heard and publicly debated by the council. This ill-conceived, counterproductive idea is not designed to identify and select the best individual, but rather to sate the desires of those seeking conflict and discord. A closed session is the best avenue to freely debate, candidly discuss, and then select the best individual based on merit and not popularity. Today, so many places across America are beset by a lack of civility in public discourse. It's unfortunate that the Herald and Review, under the guise of public participation and transparency, seeks to add Decatur to that list. Wow, a well-written letter from Jeff Lukel of Decatur. We're going to pick up a couple of letters that were written to Paul Osborne, the editor of the Decatur Tribune. This first one carries the headline, "Adding 900 more cars daily to Macon County's busiest intersection is a disaster waiting to happen." And it is written by Marilyn Dawson of Decatur. Dear Editor, at the Decatur City Planning Commission meeting on September 3rd, Mr. Abuna of KLOA Incorporated presented Aldi's traffic study results. He stated under oath that Ash Avenue's westbound traffic averaged 10 to 12 cars per hour. The room exploded in laughter at this ludicrous statement. I live on Ash, and over four 15-minute time periods on September 4th through 6th, I counted an average of 45 westbound and 51 eastbound cars on Ash. This equates to 180 westbound and 204 eastbound cars per hour from 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., hardly rush hour traffic. On Sunday, September 6th, around 1 p.m., 25 eastbound cars were waiting at the light at Ash and US 51 to turn north or continue east. Imagine how long those turning west onto Ash from US 51 will have to wait to make that immediate left turn into Aldi's parking lot, with 25 cars waiting to get through the intersection and unintentionally blocking the left turn entrance proposed by Aldi. Aldi spokesman stated they expect about 900 cars daily at this Aldi. The Herald and Review September 3rd editorial stated the traffic engineers hired by Aldi said that the traffic situation shouldn't get significantly worse because of the store. Adding 900 cars daily to already heavy traffic at the busiest intersection of Macon County is disaster waiting to happen at the portal to Houston Hills, Windsor Village, Shadow Lane, and Crest Haven subdivisions. Do Decatur officials anticipate problems? They included rezoning stipulations requiring developers to make intersection improvements deemed necessary if additional traffic generated by Aldi causes problems. Who will deem improvements necessary? How many traffic problems or accidents must occur to mandate improvements? How will pedestrians be affected by the proposed change of 3 lanes of traffic on Ash to 4 lanes without widening the road but merely taking away parking spaces on the street that now act as a buffer between pedestrians and traffic on Ash Avenue? I truly fear for the safety of children who use Ash Avenue to walk to and from the two neighborhood schools. Ironically, on September 4th, I was at the intersection by the Aldi on Mount Zion Road. There was a massive multi-car accident there that required multiple emergency and police vehicles to block the road for over an hour. Is this a picture of what is to come at US 51 and Ash Avenue? Aldi's consultants presented the commission inaccurate, misleading information. 5 planning commission members bought it. Let's hope the city council members show more common sense and not approve this proposed rezoning. A letter to the editor of the Tribune from Marilyn Dawson of Decatur. Our next letter was written by Linda Hutton of Decatur. Dear editor, at a couple of recent parades in Decatur, I noticed viewers were straining to read the signs on displays and marchers. Even with my 20/20 vision, I could not make out some of the signs. People around me asked, "Who are they? What does that banner say? Where are they from?" It would be helpful to use larger print on anything meant for public viewing. A letter to the editor of the Tribune, signed by Linda Hutton of Decatur. And finally, a letter from Jean Moyer of Decatur. Dear editor, I believe you had some good ideas for Decatur when you were mayor. I believe Ms. Moore Wolf will be another good Decatur mayor. I believe both you and her are and were bombarded by special interests who are not as good. I believe my attempts to inspire better actions by our city leaders have been misunderstood. I believe perseverance and insistence by all who intend good for Decatur must continue. I believe placing religion or any religious candidate in charge of management of our city is wrong. I believe this letter will be casually read and then gently thrown in your trash basket. I am not cynical in all my beliefs. I am practical in my entire life. You have been so kind if you have read this far. Again, this was a letter to the editor, Paul Osborne, formerly city mayor of Decatur, from Jean Moyer of Decatur. Ouch. We're picking up an editorial that is picked up by the Herald and Review, written by a Mr. Goldberg. I'm afraid I don't have the full name. And while we're all talking about Republicans, perhaps today after the debate last night, this talks about the Democrats. Biden can't save the Democrats. The wheels haven't come off Hillary Rodham Clinton's bus quite yet, but they're getting wobblier. Hence the Joe Biden boomlet. As a columnist, never mind as a conservative, I think it's a fantastic idea, as a Biden versus Trump debate could cause a national popcorn shortage. But is Biden really the answer to the Democrats' problem? That depends. As with any malady, the right treatment hinges on the correct diagnosis. Biden is a treatment for one symptom, not the whole disease. The latest ABC Washington Post poll numbers underscore the continuing crisis. Only 39% of voters find Clinton honest and trustworthy. 56% don't. Some Democrats believe the secret email server story is driving everything, and if she can just get that behind her, all will be well. But more people are starting to recognize that the email story is a symptom of Clinton's bigger problems. If she had the political skills or charisma to explain her way out of this mess, she would have done so already. She doesn't, and she hasn't. But Clinton's problems are also indicative of the Democrats' more systemic challenges, specifically that Barack Obama is a deeply polarizing figure who has been fairly disastrous for his party. Of course, liberals can make the case that he's been great for the nation or for liberalism or both, but there really is no disputing that he's been terrible for the Democratic Party. No president in modern times has presided over so disastrous a stretch for his party at almost every level of politics, Jeff Greenfield wrote in Politico. It's almost a crime, Democratic Party Vice Chair Donna Brazile told Greenfield. We have been absolutely decimated at the state and local level. Obama's presidency has been the most consistently polarizing in the history of modern polling. He is popular with partisan Democrats and few others, but that can be misleading. According to a Rasmussen poll, 86% of Republicans and 67% of independents think the country is on the wrong track. Democrats tend to agree, albeit by a smaller margin, 48% to 42%. But one need only compare the sad turnout for some Clinton events with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' monster rallies to see that the enthusiasm, even among Democrats, is against the status quo. The same political party rarely wins three elections in a row, and when it does, it is only when the country is satisfied that the party's direction with the party's direction and the incumbent is popular. So let's sum up the symptoms. The country is in a very sour mood and searching for change. Populist anti-establishment discontent runs like a prairie fire throughout the grassroots of both parties. The incumbent president is polarizing and unpopular. The Democratic bench has been cleared of viable young alternatives who could successfully promise a major course correction. And the solution to these problems is Joe Biden, the 72-year-old sitting vice president who ran unsuccessfully for the job twice? Really? Yes, Biden clears the curb height hurdle of being more charismatic than Clinton. But Biden, first elected the Senate in 1972, is arguably even more of an establishment figure than Clinton. Moreover, Clinton has at least a little room to distance herself from Obama. Biden has none. Even if you forget his other problems, he is the ultimate stay-the-course candidate, and that's the last thing anyone needs, the Democrats most of all. Wow, interesting perspective. Okay, we're out of time for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, September 17th. This has been Ruth McCauley reading with you today. I look forward to doing it again next week. And until that time, y'all take care.